Welcome, everybody, to the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, and welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. And remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Our very special guest today is guitar virtuoso and songwriter Vinnie Moore, who is a member of the hard rock heavy metal group UFO. The long-awaited new album from the legendary guitarist has been released on Mind's Eye Music and is entitled Aerial Visions. Vinnie has released 7 critically acclaimed solo albums, 5 albums, and 1 DVD as a member of rock royalty legends UFO, and 1 album with the band Red Zone Rider. His solo and UFO releases, as well as live performances, have amassed rave reviews all around the globe from both fans and music press, inspiring guitarists worldwide and launching him into aerial guitar superhero distinction. Moore has also joined Alice Cooper's band for the Operation Rock and Roll Tour and then appeared on the Hey Stupid album in 1991. Vinnie has toured all over Europe, UK, Scandinavia, Brazil, and the USA, as well as performing in India, Korea, Mexico, Russia, and Canada. The UFO, A Conspiracy of Stars tour, toured Europe in October and included 9 shows in December as opening act for Judas Priest on their Redeemer of Souls tour. Vinnie Moore and UFO will be launching their USA tour from Akron, Ohio, on March 2nd. Please welcome to the Ray Shasho Show guitar hero, Vinnie Moore. Welcome, Vinnie.
Thank you very much, Ray. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. And you're in Delaware today.
I'm at home on the East Coast. It's really cold here.
Really cold here. Yeah, I love Delaware. Gone to Rehoboth Beach many, many a times as a kid.
As I did also.
And, you know, I noticed there's, besides George Thorogood, who I guess, did he live pretty close to you guys?
He lived in Newark, Delaware, which was pretty close to where I grew up, actually.
Right. Have you ever ran into him?
No, he doesn't live here anymore. I think he's a West Coast guy, and he was a little bit older than me, so right. I was too young to get into the clubs when he was, like, playing locally back in the day.
A lot of good musicians, though, from Delaware. David Bromberg, Cab Calloway, of all people, also
right.
from Delaware. And, you know, did you know that Bob Marley lived in Delaware for a while?
I actually did. He worked at the Chrysler plant, or the GM plant, which is pretty amazing, back
That's
in the early
cool.
70s, I guess.
Yeah, I never knew that. First of all, let's chat about your latest release, Aerial Visions, which is on instrumental, like many of your albums. 2 of the songs on Aerial were written as instrumentals, but were included also on the UFO record with vocals. Which 2 tracks were those?
Man, what are they? Now's the Time and Faith, actually, were both on the first record I did with UFO, which was called You Are Here.
Right.
And I had written them as instrumentals before I joined the band, and when we got together and started working on material for that first record, I thought, hey, wait a minute, these songs are pretty rockin', and they could easily be used as vocal tunes. So I handed the demos to Phil, the singer, and he wrote some lyrics for them, and they ended up on that record, You Are Here.
That's amazing. What I said about the album is an instrumentally poetic rock treasure, and I gave it 5 stars, if you don't mind.
Oh, thank you. Out of how many? 100?
No. 5 out of 5.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
Ian Anderson of Tall said the same thing. He says, what, 5 out of 10?
Hey, that's pretty good nowadays.
No,
5 out of 100, not so good.
It's a great album. I mean, it's got everything for anybody that's into rock music or it's even got a touch of prog on a few songs. you know, a lot of favorite songs I have on that album. And I think your version of LaGrange is awesome. You know, who needs vocals on LaGrange?
Oh, thanks so much. It was a lot of fun to do that one. It's always been one of my favorite songs, and I've always done lots of ZZ Top covers on stage over the years, like Waiting on the Bus and Cheap Sunglasses and I Thank You. So, you know, it was fun to finally put one on a record.
Yeah, it's a rocking tune. Everybody needs to listen to it. The track Slam is another favorite. I kind of say, well, if Jimi Hendrix was alive, he'd be playing Slam.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of
got
that
feel to
it.
That's the biggest compliment I could ever get. Thank you.
Faith is another great track, another favorite of mine. It's also kind of prog, you know, a little bit of progressive rock, you know, influence in that tune.
Yeah,
well,
I've definitely been influenced by that type of stuff. I mean, I've been influenced by many different styles of music, and that's why I'm a little bit scattered and all over the place stylistically. And, you know, I just enjoy a lot of different kinds of music, and it all shows up in the playing and the songwriting.
I think that's a great way to be, you know, be open. There's, you know, most of the guys that I talk to today are open to, you know, different genres and different styles of playing and different music from all over the world, you know, from different countries. You know, they're
right.
Getting a lot of Middle Eastern feel, and which is really neat because, you know, music is, you know, is great all over, you know, and it's good.
Right, music transcends style. It doesn't
exactly.
matter what it is. If it's good and it moves you, it's simply good.
Yeah. Now, do you do that? Do you get certain influences from other countries and kind of input that into your music a little bit? Or
Sometimes. On the last record I did, which was called To the Core, there was a real Indian-sounding vibe.
And, yeah, right.
You know, that was an inspiration to me, that kind of music. And
that was
yeah,
a good album.
That does happen, for sure.
That was a good album as well. The track Looking Back, you know, I hear hints of Jeff Beck, and it almost has like a Beatle feel to it on Looking Back, you know, the way
Thanks,
it flows.
Man. Jeff Beck is one of my first guitar heroes. He's one of the reasons I started playing guitar, and he's always been one of my top inspirations from the time I started. So, yeah, his influence is there a lot, actually.
And, hey, have you ever wanted to play with Jeff?
Absolutely. It would be awesome. I've met him a few times, but nothing more than that.
I was supposed to interview after you at 9 o'clock tonight Beth Hart, who you know, did a lot of, you know, collaborations with Jeff Beck, and she just
had to
reschedule for next week. But, yeah, she's also done a lot, you know, with Beck. And, of course, you know, Beth Hart, the blues rock singer, is probably one of the best female singers out there today.
Mm-hmm.
So any inspiration about doing this album? What can you tell me more about the album?
Yeah, you know, when I start writing, I really don't have a plan. I just kind of pick up the guitar and play and kind of like just wait for the inspiration, wait for the ideas to start flowing. And before I know it, there's something new. I'm playing something that sparks an interest or is an emotion for me. And you know, it's either feast or famine. Either I have nothing or, you know, once I get an idea, then they start to flow, and I often have too many ideas for one song. So it goes both ways with me. And, yeah, there's not really a plan. I just start writing songs, and, you know, I have lots of songs lying around, and I just kind of go with it. And, you know, when I'm ready to make a record, I just choose between all the songs I have and, you know, based on what tunes go together best.
So
the best way to approach it for me, if I have a plan, you know, I kill the inspiration. As soon as I'm trying to do something, you know, I can't. You know, it's that kind of
right.
thing.
Right. What is there anything that inspires you? I mean, you know, I've heard some people say they go for long walks and it comes to them, or you know, they watch a certain movie or, you know, and something inspires them. I mean, how do you get these, you know, the melody into your head?
It just happens, you know, and it happens from all those things you mentioned. It happens from drinking coffee, you know, whatever. It's just, you know, what makes any person, like, you know, be in a certain mood or feel the way they do on a certain day or at a certain
right.
time of the day. It's just kind of natural, and you don't question it. You just kind of go with it.
Now, you actually took lessons. Do you also read music as well?
I used to, but I haven't done that in so long that I wouldn't be very good at it. So I would say no at this point.
You know, it's amazing how many legendary artists do not read music and pretty much play by ear. I just can't fathom that.
Well, I mean, you know? You learn because you hear something and people show you things. You pick up things off the records, and then you just record them. So to me, there's never been a necessity to notate my music and to actually write it down because I just record it. So,
well, you have to be pretty much a natural at it. You know, I mean, just like an athlete, I think. You know.
Yeah, I mean, it's the type of thing where you have to do it all the time. You don't let it go. And it's not like riding a bike in any way.
So how many guitars do you have now?
I haven't counted. I'm trying to get rid of guitars. I've been auctioning some off on eBay, and I just donated a guitar for the Tony McAlpine benefit. And you know, I have more than enough to play, and a lot of them are just sitting around in a closet in guitar cases, and there's just no point. I mean, I have too many.
Right. You know, I hear that a lot. A lot of guys that I think Pete Townsend got rid of a lot of his guitars as well. He sold a lot of them.
I mean, yeah, how many can you play?
Exactly.
And it's good to have, like, different kinds, like a Strat, a Les Paul, a Telecaster, you know, my signature model Deans, and to have them all available in the studio when I'm recording for different tones and different sounds. But when you start having, like, lots of duplicates of things, you know, at what point can you really do something with it?
Right.
It's just too many.
Got like a tickle in my throat, so excuse me.
Oh, you know what? That happened to me once on an interview. I made the mistake of eating a pistachio before the interview. I started like totally choking, and I thought, what a moron I am. Don't eat nuts.
Not a good idea to eat peanuts.
Yeah, and nuts are not good.
Yeah. You have your own record company, Mind's Eye Music.
Yeah, you know, a lot of my friends were releasing their own records, and I've been thinking about doing it for years. I almost did it with my last solo record, To the Core, and at the last minute I didn't. I started to work with a label on that, and this time, you know, I went through with it, called it Mind's Eye Music,
right. And
I put it out myself, and so far it's been going really well, and I like kind of being in control of things and having the total freedom to do whatever I want.
Now, how does that work? I mean, do you are you bringing in new artists on your label? And do you actually have a label as well?
No, it's just strictly for my releases.
Okay.
I mean, I would be open-minded and receptive to doing that sometime in the future. But for now, you know, I'm busy enough just trying to get my stuff done.
Right. Are you already thinking about the next release after this one?
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. Last year I was on the road a whole lot, doing solo stuff and also with UFO, because we had a new record out.
Right.
And I'm finally home, you know, and I'm really, really, really enjoying it. And I'm starting to get bored. Like, I want to be recording stuff, and I have some songs that are already finished, so I'm already thinking about the next solo record.
Can we have any hints about what it's going to be about? Is it,
it's going to be about love and... No, I don't know yet.
Now,
I have, like, completed songs. I have lots of ideas. And
lots of material.
Yeah, as it starts to shape up, you know, it could go in a number of directions, so we'll kind of see what happens.
I wanted to mention one other track on the new album, which is excellent. Everybody needs to buy this album. They can buy it on Amazon and also go right to your website as well.
CDBaby.com has it, mm-hmm. and also Amazon.
It's a great album. I think one of the best from 2015. The track Million Miles Gone. Now, that started out with like a Spanish flamingo type.
Right, yeah.
Music, right?
Yep.
And, I mean, that was incredible. Are you planning on doing, can you do more acoustic in the future?
I've done all acoustic songs in the past on my Defying Gravity record. I had two or three that were all acoustic with that Spanish-y kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. And on the Maze record, I had one called Never Been to Barcelona that was all acoustic. And, yeah, it's something I'd like to do in the future. I like playing acoustic. I like the whole flamenco, Spanish kind of vibe. And, you know, it's a lot of fun.
That was a great song, and then it also had a little bit of a Pink Floyd type deal to it after the intro, I think. So yeah,
yeah, I heard that too.
Did you hear that?
Spacey kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean it's amazing how many different sounds you create, you know, with all, you know, the different tracks. All the tracks are not the same. They don't sound the same. They all sound different in their own ways, and they're all strong and powerful. It's just a terrific album. I really, really enjoyed it.
Man, I can't thank you enough. Thanks so much. What was that?
Some of your other songs that I really fell in love with, Time Traveler, which, you know, people can also sample some things, some of your music on YouTube. Time Traveler and Rain are two tracks on YouTube that are getting lots and lots of hits. And if people want to know more about Vinnie Moore, you got to listen to Time Traveler and Rain, because they're...
Oh, I didn't even know that. I'm going to have to go out and check it out myself.
Oh, yeah. You're getting a ton of hits on both of those tracks.
Rain is something I always have done live, and I'm going to be doing it soon on the Monsters of Rock cruise.
Oh, okay.
Time Traveler, I've done that sometimes live, and you know, I like playing both of those songs. Very expressive for me.
Yeah, very, very, very expressive. Well, UFO has been a consistent force in rock, I guess, since their inception, 1969, somewhere about there. UFO's had a lot of changes to the lineup.
I've heard that I'm like the 17th or 18th guitarist in the band. Somebody's actually counted all of them.
That's amazing. But they still continue, and now UFO has pretty much the core of the original band in there.
Yeah, Phil's always been the common thread. He's the one member that's been there from the inception, and he's always held it together. Andy is the original drummer. I mean, he left for a while because he left the music business, but then he came back in, so he's back with us. Paul Raymond is back, and a lot of people consider him pretty much the original because he's been there since the Lights Out record, even though there was a guy before him. I think for all intents and purposes, he's kind of the original in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first joined the band, we had Pete Way, too, on bass, who was original.
Right.
Unfortunately, his health isn't so good right now. So,
how did you join UFO, which was, you know, primarily a Brit band? How'd you guys hook up?
We had a mutual friend. This guy had been my guitar tech and tour manager in the past, and he had done sound for UFO, and he heard they were looking for somebody. And he suggested it to my manager that, hey, I think Vinny would be really good for this gig, and you should check into it. So my manager talked to their manager, and then I was asked to send some of my tracks to Phil.
Right.
And so I sent like 11 songs on a CD of my instrumental stuff, like a, you know, kind of a mixtape from different records.
Right.
And I got a call like maybe 10 or 12 days later saying, hey, Phil likes the tape and wants you to join the band.
Just like that.
Yep. And then we didn't get together to do any gigs. We went right into the studio and started rehearsing songs for that first record I did with him.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever talked to Michael Schenker?
I actually toured with him in
99.
Really? We did like 32 shows on a tour in America. I was his opening act. And I didn't talk to him a whole lot because he's not a guy you really talk to a whole lot because he kind of keeps to himself. But, yeah, you know, I was a fan of his growing up, and I've seen him a few times since then, not a whole lot. But, yeah, he's definitely, I would consider him an acquaintance.
Right. Great guitar player.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Really, really good guitar player. Well, you're going to be embarking on a U.S. tour in March, which is exciting. Some of the songs our audience may hear on your set, I'm assuming Mother Mary, Run Boy Run, Lights Out, Venus, Only You Can Rock Me, Burn Your House Down, Let It Roll, which is my favorite,
mm-hmm.
The Sigh of Love, Rock Bottom, Doctor Doctor, some of those tunes are going to be on the set?
Most of them.
Okay.
We haven't been doing Let It Roll, actually, for maybe a year or two because we had done it so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that we had to add some new songs. We were kind of getting criticisms that we were doing the same songs over and over again. And with a band with such a big catalog, you have to leave something out, unfortunately.
Yep.
And but we did add Let It Roll for the Judas Priest tour we just did in December over in Europe. We started out the first night and we didn't have Let It Roll, and we quickly realized that, hey, we should add that for this type of crowd because it's a heavy-duty rocker.
What was it like touring with Judas Priest? Was that the first time you guys toured together? Or?
We did a show a few years ago in Italy with them. That was a one-off. And I think back in the day, you know, the guys did some shows together back in the 70s. Yeah, I know they toured together. And it was a lot of fun, man. I had a blast. And it was a cool audience and just cool playing with those guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually thought they were going to hang it up a year or two ago. And it kind of surprised me that they came back, which, you know, we're all happy about. But I guess, you know, they always say, have these farewell tours, and they, you know, pretty much like Kiss.
I think they were thinking about throwing in the towel, but I know now, you know, that they're going to plan to do even yet another record. So I'm sure there's going to be a tour after that. So they're still going.
Yeah, yeah, we have to keep rock alive, man. And, you know, the John, you know, not too many people are promoting it. There's a lot of great bands out there. There's a lot of good music out there, but they just won't put it on mainstream radio, which, you know, bothers me a lot because, you know,
the story of my life.
I know. I was a DJ back in the late 70s. I did Top 40. And, you know, even back then, we had, you know, a nice mix of everything, you know. And today it's all kind of dance music kind of crap.
I know what you mean, man. It's gotten worse and worse.
It's gotten worse and worse. I thought to myself, I said, it can't get any worse than this, and it continues to get worse.
Just more and more homogenized, and, you know, it's just frustrating.
It is frustrating. All the guys like you, you know, the prodigious performers, are gone. You know, everything's on electronic, you know, or, you know, even you have that, the voice, the auto tune, which,
yeah,
you know, they sing, and it, you know, changes your voice to the harmony, I guess. It's a shame.
It corrects bad notes, basically.
Yeah, yeah. So anybody can sing and be a star, I guess, in today's world. You know what I always wondered? When you join a new band, like UFO, how long does it take you to learn your catalog?
Oh, I actually haven't learned the entire catalog, only the songs that we've done live.
Right.
And in the beginning, you know, it definitely took some time to learn whatever it was, 12, 15 songs.
Right.
Same when I played with Alice Cooper back in 91, and we toured. You know, it was quite a lot of work just getting the tunes down. But once you have it down, you know, it's smooth sailing.
It's smooth sailing, yeah. But I give you guys a lot of credit for doing that. You know, especially the guys that, you know, you have your own stuff, you know, you go into Alice Cooper, have to learn his stuff for the, you know, for his album, and then back to UFO. I mean, that's, you know, it takes a lot of genius, I think, to learn how to
do. I don't know if I'd say genius. It just takes the time, and if you have a decent ear, it's not much of a problem.
Not everybody has a decent ear. That's the problem with today's music. They don't have any kind of an ear.
Maybe their ears need to be auto-tuned.
Yeah, I think so. UFO's latest release is A Conspiracy of Stars. I listened to that album as well. It's a very, very good album. Very different, you know, in some ways. I guess my favorite tunes on that, Messiah of Love and Run Boy Run, is probably one of my favorite tunes on that. You guys play a few of these songs on the tour, right?
We did both of those on the Priest tour, and Messiah especially goes down really well. Even, I mean, you can tell right from the beginning of the song, people start bobbing their heads, and you know, a lot of people haven't heard it because it's newer, and they immediately take to it, and I don't know why. It's just got that groove about it, so it's definitely been a cool thing to see that.
Yeah, it's got that groove, exactly what you're talking about. Back to YouTube, you know, you got to go more on YouTube. I don't know if you saw your solo with UFO. I think it was live in Vegas, the solo that you did on there. It was incredible, man.
Really?
Oh, it's getting lots of hits also. You started off with the James Bond theme.
Oh, okay. It must have been in Rock Bottom.
Yeah.
I really try to avoid myself. It's kind of stressful. Like, it torments me. You know, I get too critical. And it's best for me to just shy away from that stuff. I can't listen to my own music. It's a really weird psychological thing I have going. Maybe I should be analyzed or something. But I think a lot of artists are kind of like that. They don't like to hear themselves. It's like recording your own voice and listening to it back. It's just uncomfortable.
It's funny. Funny how that works. You know, I'm kind of the same way. I've written a few books, and I've never gone back and read my book, you know, because I figured, well, I wrote it. What's the point of going back and reading it, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. And what's his name? Actors like that, too. He never goes to see his movie. Johnny Depp, he never goes back to see his movie, or he won't, you know, see, like, a premiere of his movie, you know?
Oh, good. So I'm not the only one.
You're not the only one. I think most artists are like that. Talk about Alice Cooper. What was it like being in Alice Cooper's band?
I had a blast. You know, initially I was only supposed to play on the record, and I did two songs up in Bearsville Studios in New York, and I thought that was pretty much it. And then I got a call asking if I'd be into joining the band for the tour. And oddly enough, that tour was Operation Rock and Roll Tour, and we opened for Judas Priest.
Wow.
And Motorhead was on that tour also.
Really?
And Metal Church and Dangerous Toys. And it was just totally a blast playing with him because, you know, I had grown up listening to some of his music, so I was a fan.
What's Alice like when he's working?
Meaning in the studio?
Yeah, like in the studio, right?
I wasn't really around when he was doing any of his vocals. I just came in for one day, and I did rhythm and solos for two tracks on the Hey Stupid record.
Right.
So it was more like me working and him there kind of guiding me a little bit. But I've never seen him in action, unfortunately.
That was a huge record for him because that was almost like a comeback album.
Trash was his comeback record, and that one followed Trash. So definitely it was the comeback phase.
You played on Hurricane Years and Dirty Dreams.
Yep,
two great tracks. It's a really good record. I always thought that was like one of my favorite albums with Alice Cooper. You said you were on Motorhead was on the tour too, right? Or at one show, or was that the whole tour?
They were on the whole tour. Yeah.
Did you meet Lemmy?
Oh yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rest in peace, Lemmy, and rest in peace, David Bowie. That's.
I know. That I woke up this morning and that hit me really hard because I was such a big, huge Bowie fan. Just think he was such a inspirational, groundbreaking artist, and man. He just had so many great songs, and, you know, it's just sad when all your heroes start moving on, you know?
It is sad, you know, especially so young. I've done a lot of interviews, and in a lot of the interviews, unfortunately, I've done have passed away. I got to hang with Ronnie
Maybe
Milo.
I shouldn't be talking to you.
No, I've done over 200 and some interviews, so we're only looking at maybe five people have passed away, so the odds are good. But I got to, we brought Ronnie Montrose here, and I'm in Florida, at the Largo Cultural Center. We got to hang out with him, and I did an interview with him. And then, of course, after the tour was over, you know, he dies, you know. And Jack Bruce, I did interviewed him the same year he passed away. And I actually interviewed Edgar Winter the day before his brother passed away. So.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's really, really, really sad stuff.
It is sad stuff. It really is. You know, I think the fans, and sometimes I wonder about the fans and the artists, if they're on the same page, because I think fans don't consider their heroes as entertainers. It's a different thing. It's almost like a religion. Like when I was growing up, and you know, I worship guys like Yes and, you know, Pink Floyd and Robin Trower and, you know, bands
you think
like that.
In some way they're not human, and, you know.
They're not
almost.
Human. Exactly.
Right.
And I have talked to some artists that did consider themselves as entertainers, and it kind of bugged me a little bit, you know.
Right.
Do you consider
Phil
yourself
Margo jokes about that. He says, never meet your heroes, mate. You'll only be disappointed.
Right. That's true. How do you consider yourself? Are you primarily entertainer, or do you consider yourself an artiste kind of thing?
Wow, that's a good question. I don't know. I just more of an artist and songwriter, musician, I guess. And
right.
maybe there's some entertainment value in all of those things. So I guess you could say a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, football players can consider themselves entertainers. So.
Oh, today, yes. At one point, though, it was all about the sport. It used to be, you know?
Right,
especially
and to me, that's what the music is what it's all about. But
right.
at the same time, I can see entertainment value in those things.
Right. Now, you did you do a lot of clinics, right? Guitar clinics? Do you still do those?
I have. I'm doing them rarely now because I've been mm-hmm. on the road so much playing with a band.
Right.
They're kind of definitely fun to do. I've been all over the world doing them from like places like Taiwan, South Korea, Thailand, India. It's just pretty insane. And it's definitely a cool thing to do for sure.
Now, what does that entail? What do you do? Exactly.
I usually play with backing tracks and then just
okay.
basically talk to the audience and kind of let them ask questions and just talk about whatever they want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you demonstrate
some
of your
best format.
Do you demonstrate some of your technique and things like that?
Yeah, you know, whatever they ask. If they ask
right.
and I can show them and I can play it, then I'm happy to do so.
That's
except for a
cool.
couple things, you know, you have to keep some things close. You know, sometimes, like, things that I feel are really unique that I came up with, I'll pretend like I don't know what they're talking about so I can get out of showing people how to do it.
Kind of like a magician,
so,
right?
You know, hey, I work. If you really want to know that one, you figure it out. I'm not giving away my, like, special stuff.
Right. Because
yeah,
before you know it,
you
have
things like that, actually,
before
where
you
kind of get
have
territorial.
This, before you know it, you have this young punk, you know, doing your stuff at 20 years old, 19, 20 years old, and doing all Vinny covers or something.
Well, I don't mind that at all, to you know, be inspirational to a younger player. I mean, it's funny, like, there's this one little thing I have where I've had several other guitar players, like established mm-hmm. guitar players, over the years go, hey, how did you do that thing? And I immediately know what they're talking about, and I'm like, what thing? What do you mean? What part? I'm sorry, man. I don't know which one you mean.
That's funny. You're in. You have your signature guitar. That's from Dean Guitars, right?
Yeah, made in Tampa, Florida.
Yeah, very close to me. As a matter of fact, I'm only 25 minutes from Tampa South.
Waters Avenue.
Yeah, Waters Avenue. Exactly. I know exactly where that's at. And you got, I guess you call it a Super Strat?
Yeah, I would say it falls in that family, a Super Strat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything I've ever played pretty much falls in that category of a Super Strat type guitar. And, you know, with just some differences.
Now, I play some guitar. I can't now, and I don't know if I ever will because I just broke my wrist and had several surgeries on it.
Oh, no.
And it's not moving. But I had a Tele. I had a 72 Tele. And as a matter of fact, I sold it to a guitar store. Sam Ash bought
mm-hmm.
it from me for a lot of money, as a matter of fact. If anybody wants to do some, you know, smart investing, buy old guitars.
I wish I knew that back in the day, man, because I had a Gibson 335 that was made in 1965.
Oh, my God.
And I sold it for like $550 when I was about maybe 18 or 19. That
wow.
guitar is probably worth a fortune now.
Exactly.
Who would have known?
Who would have known, yeah. I mean, that's a great way to pick up some cash, I'm telling you. And some people don't know what they have. If, you know, you go to certain auctions or, well, not auctions, I guess, flea markets and things like that, especially the old acoustic guitars.
You know, for a while, the Japanese were actually buying up all the collector's guitars because their economy was doing really, really well.
Right.
At a certain point, back in the 80s and 90s, I guess. And so they were buying all these old vintage Teles, Strats, Les Pauls, things like that.
Right.
And I just remember going to these guitar shows and seeing Strats for $20,000, Les Pauls for $30,000. And it's like, man, it's become a collector's thing and not a player's thing.
Yeah. My Tele, I bought that for $300 in, actually, Wheaton, Maryland. I forgot the name of the place. Very, very popular
Washington player. Music?
Not Washington Music. It was
okay.
God, I forgot the name of it. This guy was very, very famous in that area in Wheaton. Anyway, $300 I paid for it, and I sold it for about $3,000.
Wow.
So, what a markup. I also had a lot of autographs on there, too, because I met a lot of people. I hung out with Alvin Lee backstage, and his band had Ansley Dunbar was the drummer, and Eric Burden was the opening act for Alvin Lee and Boz Burrell, you know. So, and I had Johnny Winter's autograph, and, you know, so I guess that added to the value maybe a little bit.
Yeah, well, 1,000% is pretty good.
That's pretty good. Now, that, do you play with tellies at all, or is, you're strictly a Strat man?
I'm strictly a Strat man. You know, in my studio, I have a Strat made by Dean. I have my signature model Dean guitars, which are called VM2000s.
Right.
I have a Les Paul down there. And you know, most of the time I find that I play my signature model. It's the easiest thing to do because it feels most comfortable for me. Mm-hmm. But at times when I'm really trying to go for something different, you know, I have some other tones and some other flavors available in the studio.
And you have
but
a home
yeah,
studio,
Telly
right?
is something I definitely like to get. I don't have one anymore.
I was wondering, what do you felt was the difference between the feel of a Telly and a Strat? What was the main difference when you play? I was going to ask you that, but I guess you don't play Tellys too much.
Right. Well, I've played Tellys, and, you know, the first thing is the shape of the body.
Right.
To me, they have more of a hard edge, and they always mm-hmm. dig into your chest like some Gibsons do.
Right.
And that's why my guitar has more of a Strat-y, rounded edge, you know, and a cutaway, and it just kind of sinks into your body. I mean, you get used to whatever you're playing, whether it be a Les Paul or a Telly or a 335, that's kind of all have that hard edge that kind of tends to dig into your body and your arm. I mean, you'll get used to it, but I think Strats are more comfortable.
Right. How about the feel of, like, playing lead between a Strat and a Gibson? Is there a big difference in those two?
There's a little difference because a Gibson has a smaller scale length, which means mm-hmm. the strings are shorter and they're more slinky. They're easier to bend. So, you know, if you change back and forth, you kind of got to get used to, you know, readjusting the strength of your left hand.
Right.
Because if you're used to playing like a Strat kind of guitar and you go to a Gibson, you'll overbend because there's mm-hmm. less tension on the strings.
What kind of strings do you normally use?
I've been using Roto Sounds, either a 9-gauge set or a 10-gauge set.
Okay. And what about, do you tinker around at all with electronics and, you know, to create some different sound effects or...
Meaning pedals, or?
Yeah, I mean, you know, pedals and, you know, anything, you know, amps, anything, really.
Definitely pedals. I have a bunch of different pedals on the road and in the studio and have different amps for, you know, again, different flavors. And I also tinker with the electronics inside the guitar, too.
Okay.
You know, the impedance of the potentiometers and the capacitors. And I have a little bit of an electronics background. I went 3 years in high school as a trade. I took electronics and then 1 year of college.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm no expert, but, you know, I definitely have that background, so I tinker around a little bit with that kind of stuff.
Pretty cool. Yeah, I had to, when I was in radio, you had to get a first class, second class, and third class FCC license. I had to take the electronics too, you know, so I never actually did anything, but I knew everything on paper.
Right,
I could
yeah.
actually fix a transmitter, but I knew how, you know, like the circuit boards and, like you said, the resistors and capacitors and transformers and, you know, all that stuff. But that's pretty cool.
Step up, actually, step down, isolation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, in college we started really getting into the theory and all this seven-inch
yep.
theory and all this stuff, and it's like, well, I wanted to play music, and it just got a little bit too intense for me.
Ohm's Law.
Yes, that's an easy one.
Yep. Fun stuff. It was pretty difficult, though. It was one of the hardest things I ever did when I took that test in Miami. Do you worry about the genre of rock kind of fading out a little bit?
I do. I mean, because guitar music has been so popular for so many years now, and mm-hmm. I remember at one point looking back and thinking, oh, well, you know, before Chuck Berry, saxophone was probably the main instrument, mm-hmm. and you heard a lot of that.
right.
and jazz, and then the early rock and roll, and then guitar kind of took over, and it's really been that way ever since, guitar-oriented music.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wouldn't it be scary if that were to change someday? And I don't think it is yet, but I'm afraid of a world that would be, like that, without guitar being the main
thing. Too. Yeah. I think it's just, it's just not getting exposed like it should, because the main place to get exposure, in my opinion, is always been the radio, and it's always been mainstream radio. So, the top 40 stations is where a lot of people, got their hits played and things like that, and you see the crap on the radio. Yeah, made legends. So I don't know. I don't know who's in charge of all that now. I think a lot of attorneys own radio stations.
Who's in charge of the Internet? Let's call them up.
Yeah, let's call them up. The problem, people that are in charge don't give a damn about the music. All they see is,
money.
Dollar signs and things like that.
Yep, unfortunately, that's correct.
They just don't care. Benny, here's an interesting question. I ask everybody that I've interviewed. I get some interesting answers. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie Field of Dreams, a wish to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past, they could be passed on or present, who would that be?
Wow. There's probably a bunch of people, living, like maybe somebody like Jeff Beck. Jimi Hendrix, would have been great. The singer, you mentioned Robin Trower. One of my favorite singers has always been Jimmy Doerr.
Oh, yeah.
Trower's band,
yep.
Always wanted to work with him, and unfortunately he passed on maybe 15, 20 years ago.
Right.
So that would be a guy I would think to mention.
Yeah, Jimmy Doerr was underrated for sure.
He was totally underrated, man. He's one of my favorite singers ever. Him, Dio, Paul Rogers.
Yep. Paul Rogers. Yep. Well, that's about the answers I'd expect from a legendary rock guitarist. I get answers like, Robin Trower said James Brown, because he said he's got a lot of R&B influence in his music, So that kind of took me by surprise, because I thought he might have said a blues guy,
Right. I love James Brown stuff, but, I've heard the stories of being in his band, and I don't know if I could ever survive that. Apparently, he was pretty regimented.
Yeah. Did you see the movie about him? Did the James Brown movie?
I watched that on a plane one day, and so
did
I want to go back and watch it again, because when I watch movies on a plane, I tend to, be 50% capacity.
It was a good
movie.
So,
yeah, I want to go back and watch it again, but it was definitely interesting.
Yeah, it's a well-done movie. I think the actor is the same guy that acted in 42, the Jackie Robinson story.
I haven't seen that one either.
Yeah, very, very good actor. Now, here's a band we don't talk hear about too much. How about Red Zone Rider? What's going on with them?
We got together to do a record. It was a really quick thing.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were writing songs, we started thinking, man, this is coming out really well. That we could really do something with this. And we all kind of got our hopes up that we'd be out on the road touring, and then it just sort of didn't work out. I mean, the record came out. A lot of people liked the record and the songs on the record, and I happen to really like that record. And, unfortunately, we just couldn't get it together.
Now, that's a trio, right?
Yeah, it was a trio.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly Keeling on vocals, Scott Coogan on drums. Kelly was playing bass and keyboards. And that was one of the things that kind of made it difficult to go on the road from the very beginning is that, you got one guy singing, playing bass, and playing keyboards. How do you achieve that?
Right.
You got to add guys to the band or change the nature of the songs by leaving things out. And there was just other things that kind of made it impossible to go out and really do anything because I was busy touring. Scott Coogan, the drummer, is a member of Ace Frehley's band, and he was busy touring. And, we just never got the time to get it together, unfortunately.
Right.
But I'm really, really proud of that record, and I'm glad I did it. And people should definitely check it out.
Well, don't give up hope. I mean, you guys may still get back together and you know, do some stuff. You know, sometimes these things happen, and you know, you guys talk
it's
about
definitely
well, that's
impossible.
That.
And yeah, I'm open-minded to doing another record at some point. Maybe we could kind of launch it a second time.
Where did you guys meet each other? I mean, are you friends from way back, or?
I knew Kelly years ago,
right,
and always kind of kept him in the back of my mind as someone I would like to work with because I think he has a great voice. I had no idea he played bass or keyboards and wrote songs like he does, so that was kind of a nice surprise. And I kind of got a call asking if I'd be interested in doing something with him, and I was definitely open to it. I had some open time, and it sounded like a really cool thing. And we kind of found Scott just by looking around. I had never met him before, but he's from the Vegas area, and that's where we did the record. And so that kind of worked out. And, he's become a real good friend of mine.
So where did did Scott come from, another band as well? Or
Scott's been in Lita Ford. He's been in,
okay,
what was that band with Nikki Sixx? I can't remember the name. Not 6 a.m., obviously not Motley Crue, but that other band he had. Maybe, was it Brides of Destruction? I'm not good with names.
I can't recall.
Yeah,
right,
he's played with a lot of people. He played with Paul Gilbert in the past. And
it's almost like a mini super band. You know?
Well, we got a lot of press, and that's what people were saying in the reviews. And it's like, whoa, wait a minute, this is just the first record, you know, and now we're hearing supergroup. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, anytime you hear supergroup, things like that always happen, you know?
Right. Usually that's a hype, and this was really a good band, and so we were like, man, we don't want that stigma attached to us.
Well, keep at it. Hopefully you guys will, you know, because it's always great to do different things. And so what else you got going on? I mean, do you have any collaborations for the future? What's your plans for the next few years, I guess?
Wow. My plans at the moment are just, you know, getting some more solo stuff out there.
Right.
This Monsters of Rock cruise I'm doing in about a month, and also the upcoming UFO tour in USA starting in March. And then we should have some festival gigs over the summer. So that's kind of what I'm thinking of for the moment. And, you know, I have some other long-term goals, like getting another band together to do some of the vocal songs I've written and have laying around.
Who would be your choice for somebody to do some guest vocals on your album? Who would you pick?
Oh, man, there's so many good ones. like Chris Cornell, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Paul Rogers, as I've mentioned.
Right.
And people like Jimmy Dewar, who are no longer with us. Oh, man, there's just so many.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
Why don't you do that? Why don't you ask one of those guys to be a guest on your one of your albums? I'm sure they'd do it. I know Paul Rogers would definitely do it.
Not a bad idea. Hey, Paul, forget this Bad Company thing. You know, I don't know if that's going to go anywhere.
He's off and on with that. Yeah, why not?
See what happens.
Yeah. The cruises. You've done those cruises before, right?
I've done one Monsters of Rock as a member of UFO.
This
one I'm doing as a solo artist, and I've done a bunch of those over in Europe, like around Scandinavia, you know, Sweden to Finland and things like that.
Those got to be a blast, huh?
Oh, man, those Scandinavians, man, they can drink and party, believe me.
Yeah.
You don't want to try to compete with them.
Oh, the Irish. The Irish you got to worry about when it comes to drinking. But Scandinavians.
Totally. I've been there, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just Bush League compared to those guys.
What do they drink over in Scandinavia? What's your big drink?
They drink a lot of beer, but, of course, everything.
Yeah. Yeah, the
vodka,
Irish are known
of course.
Everything. That's pretty cool. I always wanted to take one of these cruises with all the rock bands. I know they have there's a bunch of them now. I mean, you name the genre, they've got it. You know, they got country, they got the Prague cruises. I think Yes headlines that one. Who's on your cruise?
Oh man, We have Extreme, Steve Vai, a bunch of like guitar players like Michael Badio, me, Uli Roth. Who else? Sebastian Bach.
Oh wow!
I mean, there's like 40 bands. So
yeah. You guys ever want to jam together?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've done that on stage in the past over the years a lot, and yeah, I'm definitely open-minded to that.
What so what do you do when you're not making music?
Man, I always seem to be playing, whether it be touring or recording. And if I'm not doing that, I feel like I should be doing that. So unfortunately, not a lot of other stuff.
Really? You don't paint or you know, you don't have any hobbies or
No. Definitely no artistic ability.
Yeah, usually musicians have other passions as well. It's kind of interesting. But usually
we can't talk about those at the moment.
A lot of
musicians are good artists also.
Right.
It's really weird, and I didn't inherit that gene, so I don't know why.
Now, are you married?
Yes.
You are married. How many years?
Since 93.
93. Congratulations.
Thanks very much.
Yeah. Children?
Two.
You got two kids. How old?
Boys 17 and 19.
Wow. Now, is anybody into music? Are you teaching them?
No, they don't play. I mean, they like music. They like several different styles of music, but they're not interested in playing. They're more interested in sports.
Well, interested in sport. What kind of sports do they play?
Football.
Hmm.
Would be the top one.
Now, who's your football team? Are you following anything?
Well, I'm an Eagles fan, and they had a horrible year, so unfortunately they're not in the playoffs. But I'm enjoying watching the other teams. It was an exciting weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the games were crazy. The ending of the Cincinnati-Pittsburgh game was insane. And the Minnesota Vikings kicker missing.
That's a shame.
Yeah, losing because of that bad kick. And, just totally crazy.
Yeah, it's a real shame to end a game like that, you know. I mean, the guy's a great kicker, too. You know, it just makes you wonder about it.
Maybe he just put too much pressure on himself. I have no idea.
Yeah, I think they compared it to, a professional golfer trying to make a, you know, like a two-foot putt, and he misses. You know, in the PGA or something like that.
And you go, how does that happen? Man, it's just crazy.
Yeah, same impact.
And Cincinnati had the game totally won. It was over.
Mm-hmm.
And there was just a whole series of bad things that happened.
So what's your prediction for the Super Bowl?
I just want to see somebody new. I'd like to see the Cardinals go. You know, I'm tired of the same teams being there every year.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I'm up for anybody who hasn't been there in a long time. So I say Arizona. I hope they go all the way.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Arizona's got a really good team. And, I'm hoping Arizona makes it as well.
We've seen a lot of the Patriots, great team. We've seen a lot of Green Bay in recent years. And, you know, just want to see some new blood in there.
Right. Yeah, I was a Redskin fan for a long time. And also, you know, we adopted the Ravens, being, you know, Baltimore so close to D.C. But I really kind of turned into a Buccaneer fan being here in this area. And I'm a big FSU fan, so that means, you know, I like Jameis Winston. So kind of hoping the Buccaneers get their act together over the next few years.
You need to bring John Gruden back.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right about that, yeah.
Spider 2Y banana, man. Spider 2Y banana works every time.
That's funny. Of course, the Eagles never did like the Redskins or the Ravens.
Eagles don't mind the Ravens, but Eagles fans hate the Cowboys.
The Cowboys, really?
And, you know, they don't like anybody in the NFC East, which is the Redskins and the Giants, of course.
Yeah,
but
there's
a very special hatred for the Cowboys.
Yeah, we don't like the Cowboys either. It was good to see them fall apart this year for a change. You know, and
yeah, the
I don't
Eagles
think,
were the ones that knocked Tony Romo out.
That's right.
For the season, the first time.
That's right. Yep. Well, you got anything else for me? Anything else you want to promote or besides the new album, which you know is gangbusters. It's a great album. Everybody needs to go out and buy this. One of the best of the year. I really mean that.
Thanks so much. And yeah, that would be the main thing at this point that I'm would like to promote and hope that people check out at least to you know see if they like it.
And of course, the UFO tour, which I did not see any Florida dates.
Unfortunately, it always seems to work out that way.
Yeah, there's some bands, especially the Brit bands, kind of bypass you know parts of Florida for some reason. I don't know if it costs more to come down here or. I never did figure that out.
Well, on this leg, we're bypassing the whole East Coast. We're not even doing anything in the Northeast, which is kind of amazing. So I'm kind of hoping we come back again later in the year and hit the Northeast and maybe do some Florida shows then.
That'll be great. I know UFOs have always been huge in Europe. Very, very big in Europe.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun playing over there.
Yeah. Vinny, thank you so much for being on the show today, man. I really, really appreciate it. And more importantly, for all the great music you've given us and continue to bring. And, you know, the best of luck. And I hope your album sells millions and millions of copies.
Me too. Thank you very much. And thanks for talking to me. I totally appreciate it. And I want to hear you say Shasho Show 5 times in a row very quickly.
Ray Shasho Show, the Ray Shasho Show, the Ray Shasho Show, the Ray Shasho Show, the Ray Shasho Show.
That's pretty good. I'm not even going to try it. That's amazing.
There you go.
Well done.
All right, Vinny. Thank you so much, man.
Okay, Ray. Great talking to you. Thanks, man.
Great talking to you, too. Take care.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Be sure to purchase the long-awaited new album from legendary guitarist Vinny Moore entitled Aerial Visions on Mind's Eye Music. The album is available to purchase at Amazon.com. For more information, visit www.vinnymoore.com. Or you can visit his Facebook page, www.facebook.com/vinny.moore.official. Also purchase UFO's latest release, A Conspiracy of Stars, also available at Amazon.com. For UFO tour dates, visit UFO/music.info. Or http://ufo/music.info/. Join me bi-weekly Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on The Ray Shasho Show. Very special thanks to the great Billy James of Glass Onion PR for hooking us up today with the legendary Vinny Moore. Our next show... We were supposed to interview Beth Hart later on today for a pre-recording for our next show, and I think we're going to be able to reschedule it. So coming up on my next show, my very special guest will be the incredible Beth Hart. If you have comments or suggestions or would like to be a guest on The Ray Shasho Show, call 941-877-1552 or email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. Don't forget to purchase a copy of my latest book entitled Wacky Shenanigans on F Street, Proud to be Politically Incorrect in Washington, D.C., available at Amazon.com. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on VBS Radio, Station 1.